So today I'm going to talk about a traditional breakthrough koan that is rarely talked about in Taisho. The three traditional Rinzai breakthrough koans go as follows. The first one we know very, very well, which is Joshu's Mu. The second one is one that is not used much anymore as a breakthrough koan, but more as a subsequent koan to test someone's breakthrough, and that is the sound of one hand. And the third one is the one that I'm going to look at today with all of you, and that one is called original face. Now, it's used in modern times in a little different way. The koan in modern times that relates to this original koan of original face is who am I? So we're going to look into that today. So the koan itself goes like this. The koan goes, without thinking of good or evil, at this very moment, what is your original face before your parents were born? Without thinking of good or evil, right or wrong, at this very moment, what is your original face before your parents were born? Now this koan, the way that I just presented it, comes from, or is described in, a case from the Mumonkan. And I'm going to read the entire case now, just to start us off on this discussion of how critically important every piece of this koan is. And we're going to go into it in detail. So the koan from the Mumonkan is koan number 23. And its title is, Think Neither Good Nor Evil. And the case goes like this. The sixth patriarch was pursued by Monk Myo up to Deyurai. The patriarch, seeing Myo coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, the robe and bowl symbolize the faith. Are they to be fought for? I allow you to take them away. Myo tried to lift them, but they were as immovable as a mountain. Hesitating and trembling, Myo said, I have come for the Dharma, not for the robe. I beg you to teach your servant. The sixth patriarch said, when you were pursuing me and were not thinking of good or evil, but only of attaining the treasure, where was your original self? At this, Myo was all at once enlightened. His whole body was dripping with sweat. With tears flowing, he made obeisance and asked, besides the secret words and meanings, is there anything else deeper still? The patriarch said, what I have just told you is not secret. You have realized your true self, and what is secret is in you yourself. Myo said, when I was at Obai together with the other monks, and Obai was their common master, I did not awaken to my true self. Thanks to your instruction, which is to the point, I am like one who has drunk water and actually experienced for himself whether it is cold or warm. You are my master. The patriarch said, we both have Obai for our teacher. Hold fast to what you have learned from him. And that's the case. We will go into the commentary in the verse a little bit later. So, this case, think neither good nor evil. Just the title itself is a very critical key, not only to this case, but to our own awakening. Think neither good nor evil. This sounds much easier than it actually is. The ordinary human mind is continually thinking of good and evil. Almost every moment. Comparing, judging, liking, disliking, clinging to, rejecting, ignoring, thinking of good or evil. I'm a good person, I'm a bad person. I'm good at this, but I'm not good at that, and someone else is better at that than me. And there's something I don't have, but that's because I lack something. And if only things were this way, then I could come to awakening. But because they're that way, I can't come to awakening. So this thinking, neither good nor evil. Now, I mentioned before this master from China, Su Yun. So Su Yun was a great contemporary Rinzai master in China. He had thousands of followers. He actually lived to a very, very old age. I believe he died at age 119, kind of like Joshu. And he died perhaps 30, 40 years ago. But some of his teisho are memorialized in a wonderful book. I don't even know if it's still in print. It's called Chan and Zen Teaching, First Series, by Luke Kuan Yu, whose name in English is Charles Luke. And I'm going to read to you something from a teisho that Su Yun gave. So he wrote, difficulty for beginners. And at this point, I would call us beginners because we're only really 2 days into the session. So in a sense, we're all beginning, but we're always, in a sense, beginners. They said difficulty for beginners, the remiss mind. So I won't read all of this, but I'll read the beginning of it. The most common defects of a beginner lie in his inability to lay down his habits of false thinking, of self-indulgence and ignorance caused by pride and jealousy, of self-inflicted obstructions caused by concupiscence, which means laziness, right and wrong, anger and stupidity, and love, of laziness and gluttony, to selfness and otherness. With a belly filled with all of the above defects, how can he or she be responsive to the truth? So here's this thing now about this thinking good or evil, thinking it continually, this comparison-mindedness, this continual resistance to the way things are in this moment because they're not exactly how they need to be for me to progress in my life, for me to be happy, for me to throw it all away and go to the center. But something is keeping me from going there. So in our zazen, feelings arise, thoughts arise, distractions arise. We don't want them there. We try to change them. We try to deal with them. We try to fix them so that then we can finally go into the depth of ourselves and work deeply with our koan, undisturbed by all these torments. Now, the essential point here, the essential point in Zen and the essential point in life is to develop what I've referred to in the past couple of days individually in Dokusan, and I believe we talked about it initially before session started. This attitude that a word encapsulates, and the word is dispassion, dispassion. It's the ability to allow something in your awareness without your reactivity. You're holding on to it, you're pushing it away, you're ignoring it, your struggle with it, your attempt to change it. This is the essential first step of our practice. Dispassion, developing this dispassion. Or, as the sixth patriarch said to Monk Myo, thinking neither good nor evil. Thinking neither, I want this, I don't want this. How do we do that? There are many ways to get there. There's no one perfect way. Everyone has to find their own way. But it's very helpful to reflect upon certain facts of reality. Facts. One fact is that whatever is appearing right now in your consciousness, whatever is happening in your life, whatever is happening in the world that you observe, could not have been otherwise right now. Now, even going beyond that, not only could it not have been otherwise, but it is already done. It's a done deal. I use the analogy of light in the universe. So, one of our wonderful past Dharma masters, Albert Einstein, and I do believe he was in a way a Dharma master, he said, I had a religious experience and it took me 20 years to put it into mathematics. So one aspect of this religious experience was his realization that there was a limiting speed in the universe. The limiting speed was the speed of light. The speed of light is 186,000 miles per second. And anytime I talk about this, I'm taking a big risk because we have an astronomer in our midst, and I may be speaking wrongly. 186,000 miles per second. Why is that so important? Why does that matter so much? And why did this realization by Einstein that there is nothing that is faster than that, and not only that, things don't happen instantaneously throughout the universe, but spread throughout the universe. Why does that make this moment absolute? Now I'll use a simple analogy. Light from the sun takes 8 minutes and 20 seconds to reach the earth. If the sun were to go out, when we see it suddenly go dark here, that happened before. It happened 8 minutes and 20 seconds before. There's no changing it. There's nothing you can do about it. It's a done deal. By the moment you become aware of it, it has already happened. What's the point of liking or disliking? Fighting it or not fighting it? Clinging to it or rejecting it? What's the point? From the standpoint of our Zen practice, it's a done deal. Now that's a rather extreme example. How about something happening right in your vicinity? How about the tweeting of a bird? How about a thought passing in front of your mind? How about a feeling in your body, pain in your knee, a choice you make? It's interesting. There was a research project where they used functional MRI scanning. And they were able to look at parts of the brain that were involved in decision making, and what they found was mind-blowing. They found that from the time someone was conscious of having made a decision, the decision was already made by the brain, they weren't conscious of it. The decision happened before, and then it appeared in consciousness and then appeared in action. So anything that you hear right now, the sound of my voice, the moment you hear it, it has already happened. Why fight it? Why struggle with it? I understand. In the regular day-to-day life where we live within maps, it's important to plan, important to try X, Y, and Z, to manipulate the world as it appears to us. That's one thing, but I'm not talking about that world. I'm talking about the real world, not the virtual world of everyday human existence, which is not unimportant, but is not the world that we are probing, entering, embracing here in this Zendo, in this Sesshin. We're here to find out about the real world, the actual world, not the world of thinking and model making, the actual world. In the actual world, whatever happens in your mind body, in your consciousness, at any moment, has already happened. You're just becoming aware of it. This is the beginning of dispassion. This is how we start with dispassion. If we understand that the experience we are having now is inevitable and a done deal, we can begin to let go of our reactivity and simply what? Simply what? Allow it in the moment of the sunshine of our awareness. Allow it in the moment of the sunshine of our awareness. And that, my friends, is Zazen. That's what Zazen is. Zazen is dispassionately, with clarity, with trust, with courage, allowing everything as it is right now, in the moment of the sunshine of your awareness, moment after moment after moment. This is the beginning. This is the starting point. So I'll go back to Suyun, and he goes on in this Teisho he gave. He goes on to talk about the easiness for beginners, the easiness. So he said here, easiness for beginners, laying down of the burden of thinking, and giving rise to a single thought. Although the training seems difficult, it becomes very easy once its method is known. Where does easiness lie for beginners? There's nothing ingenious in it, because it lies in laying down, or as I put it in the past in the session, putting down, laying down, putting down. Laying down what? The burden of distress, and in parentheses says klesha, which is a Sanskrit term for this psychological distress, or in modern terms we call it neurosis, or you could call it the human condition. The burden of distress caused by ignorance. And what is ignorance? Ignorance is believing that somehow it could have been otherwise, therefore I must react. I got to do something. I can't abide by this. He says, laying down what? The burden of distress caused by ignorance. How does one lay it down? And then he describes a method. You have all been at the bedside of a dead man. You try to scold him, he will not get excited. If you give him a few strokes of the staff, he will not strike back. Formerly, he indulged in ignorance, and now he cannot do so anymore. Formerly, he longed for reputation and wealth, but now no longer wants it. Formerly he was contaminated by habits, but now he is free of them. He does not make distinctions and lays down everything. Dear friends, please look at all this. When we have breathed our last, this physical body of ours will become a corpse. He's showing this in rather extreme language. So this is his way of describing dispassion. A corpse doesn't react. Now, we're not suggesting that you become a corpse, but there is a certain truth here. There is this lack of fighting with, struggling with, pushing against the moment-to-moment karmic reality unfolding as you hold your mind attentively. This is thinking neither good nor evil. This is the very, very beginning. Thinking neither good nor evil. Now, when you think neither good nor evil, it's very, very important now. This is not pushing away those things because they're not important. It's not doing any battle with the things that seem to be distracting you. It is totally inviting them, allowing them in the moment of the sunshine of your awareness, so that they become your Zazen. The sound of the car is your zazen. The pain in your knee is your zazen. The stupid repeated thought that comes into your mind is your zazen. If there's no resistance to it, because it's done. At the moment it enters your awareness, it has already happened. Why would you ever battle with it? Be a waste of your energy, a waste of your time. So, go into this koan. So this monk Myo was pursuing the sixth patriarch, and if you know the story about the sixth patriarch, the sixth patriarch himself became enlightened hearing the following words from the Diamond Sutra. It was a monk who was actually reciting them while he was collecting firewood in order to sell, to bring back home to his mother with whom he lived, a little bit of money so that they could survive, because his father died when he was 33 years old, and he was dirt poor, and he was illiterate, never went to school. And he was collecting firewood, and a monk stopped and was chanting the following words. Allow mind, having no fixed abode, to flow forth. Allow mind, having no fixed abode, to flow forth. Is that not what's happening in each moment of awareness? With every form that arises in the body-mind, with every pain, every sound, every smell, every touch, every thought, is that not mind, without fixed abode, flowing forth? He heard these words and he had an awakening experience. He was quite a prodigy. This is with no prior training. Allow mind, having no fixed abode, to flow forth. And he went to the monk and he said, please tell me, what are you reading? He said, oh, this is from the Diamond Sutras, or the words of the Buddha. And I got this book from my master, Obai. And then the sixth patriarch went to the monastery and became Obai's student. And 8 months later, when Obai had fully understood the depth of the sixth patriarch's enlightenment, and Obai, by the way, is the fifth patriarch, he gave to him the robe and bowl at night in secret, because he knew that this was so radical that there were people that would try to kill him and take the robe and bowl. People who were attached to the appearance, the robe and bowl, the meaning, the symbolism, who are missing the deep truth. And Monk Myo was one of these people. He was actually a former general. He became a monk. And he was a very tough person. And also, from this story, we know his heart was totally in it. It was so important to him. A wrong had happened. The robe and bowl, this treasure that had been passed down from the first patriarch, Bodhidharma, finally to Obai, somehow got waylaid, stolen perhaps, by this illiterate person from the south. This was in the north of China. And he was from the south of China, Huineng. So he chased him relentlessly, relentlessly. So when he came upon the sixth patriarch, obviously the sixth patriarch was very, very afraid and was hiding in the shadows, put the robe and bowl on a rock. And Myo went for the robe and bowl and couldn't lift them. This is his first opening, his first laying down, his first putting down the burden of klesha. He couldn't lift them. Please, I've come for the Dharma, not for the robe. I beg you to teach your servant. This is the opening. This is the letting go. This is the putting down. This is the humble, open-hearted, spacious mind that allows anything in, anything. I had the idea before that there were certain things that had to be a certain way, including me, myself, and the world, and the way things are happening. And until that happens, I can't lay it all down. But he finally laid it down, laid it down. Now his mind is open. And the sixth patriarch said, without thinking of good or evil, at this very moment, what was your original face before your parents were born? Now, when you're not fighting with the forms of the world, you can begin to see into them what they are made of, what their substance is. I described to you, to one of you in Dokusan earlier today, an analogy for this. It would be as if there were millions and millions of figurines, and they were of different sorts. Some were horses, some were pigs, some were cows, some were people, some were cars. And you wanted some and you'd rejected others, and you put them in a hierarchy of value, of valence, liking and disliking, good and evil. And all wrapped up in this, you didn't notice something about all these figurines, and this is actually the model of our human existence. What you didn't notice is that every single one was nothing other than pure gold. Pure gold. Until you put down, you're struggling with whether you want the pig or the horse or the human or the car, and which one was better than the other, and which one should be this way or that way, when already the die is cast, so to speak, as I said before, the die is cast. By the time anything arises in your consciousness, the die has already been cast. When you get that, when you are no longer involved in all this good and evil thinking, in all the burdens of kleshas, of comparison, of attachment to right and wrong, love and hate, then you can begin to say, what is its substance? What are these thoughts made of? Where do they come from? What is their source? And the sixth patriarch pointed directly to the source. He said, without thinking good or evil, without all these resistances to the actual way that this reality is presenting, what was the original substance, so to speak, or your original face before even your parents were born? I'm going to take it all the way back. Let's not stop at your parents. Before the universe was born. What was your original face before the universe was born? When everything was a singularity. It had no variegation, no distinguishing features. No laws, no rules. It was neither large nor small. Everything was one thing, but it filled everything. There was nothing outside of it. There's no space around it. There was no self knowing it. What was that original substance, original face? Now, let's go further into this. So the commentary on this koan goes like this. And this was written by Mumon, who compiled all 48 of these koan, as you know, in the Mumon koan. So the commentary is, of the sixth patriarch, it has to be said that in an emergency he did something extraordinary. He has a grandmotherly kindness. It is as if he has peeled a fresh lychee, removed its seed, and then put it in your mouth so that you need only swallow it. Without thinking good or evil. That was the peeling of the lychee. Okay? He did something extraordinary at the spur of the moment. It was a dire emergency. He could have been killed, and Myo would have created terrible karma for himself. He, with the most deep-hearted kindness, said, without thinking of good or evil, without judging, resisting, what is actually happening in this very moment, which could not have been otherwise. What was your original face? Now the verse goes like this. You describe it in vain. You picture it to no avail. You can never praise it fully. Stop all your groping and maneuvering. There is nowhere to hide your true self. When the universe is annihilated, it remains indestructible. What is that it? This is what we all have to find out. We utilize what comes as that. When we are no longer contending with what comes, we begin to notice that what comes, given its space in the center of awareness, is actually in our center. It is our center. When we look into it, peer into it, ask what is its substance, we are asking what is my substance? What is my original face? Before I became my name, my gender, my beliefs, my achievements, my failures, all of that. What was I before all of that arose? What is the substance of all these things that I attach to, that I identify with? This now, when we put down good and evil, we are able to do. For the very first time, we can do that kind of inquiry. This is deep, deep practice. So you take your koan, you take what is happening, whatever might be grabbing your attention, and pull it down into the deepest part of yourself. Why? Because it is actually already there. You're just bypassing all the machinations, all the groping and maneuvering. Avoid all the groping and maneuvering. It's already in the center of your consciousness. Just go right there. Don't battle with it. Go there. See what it is. One master put it this way. He said, I never let a single thought cheat me. I go to the source of the thought, and there I say, what are you made of? I want to see your naked reality. This is the attitude. Now, you may think that your particular situation is extraordinarily difficult, more difficult than the normal person, the average person. Too hard, too difficult, too much of a burden. I've tried. I've done everything, it just isn't working. You know, I'll go through the motions, but in my heart of hearts, I know that I can't do this thing. I've tried, failed. I want to read a little bit from a letter that I received about a week ago. I'll remove the distinguishing features of the letter. And I want you to think of this in terms of this, what we started out talking about, dispassion, dispassion. So, it's written, Dear friends, hello and blessings. And I want to just show you this. It has a beautiful butterfly in color drawn on it. And the lettering is perfect. And there isn't a single errant letter. Everything is perfect about this. Whoever wrote this took intimate great care. So I'll read you this letter. Hello and blessings. I am, and he spoke his name. I am a 27-year-old prisoner incarcerated in the so-and-so Department of Criminal Justice. Last year, I changed my institution's records religious preference from nun to Buddhist. I've come to realize that although some of my ideas and beliefs are indeed atheist, even nihilist, these labels do not accurately or sufficiently express the broader perspective I've been gaining over the last 3.5 years since my arrest and incarceration. Officially changing my religious preference is not only a symbolic act, it also increases this unit's population of Buddhist prisoners, so Buddhist volunteer chaplains are more likely to come here. I'm writing you today to ask you for a moment of your time to take into consideration what I am looking for. I need spiritual guidance and practice support. There is no one here for me to fellowship with or simply to talk with about Dharma matters. I have no guru, no roshi, no sangha, no santana, no satsang. I have no access to teachers or practitioners of any Buddhist or yogic traditions. I don't even have a regular access to this unit's Christian chaplain due to the highly restrictive nature of my housing. I'm assigned to administrative segregation, which is indefinite solitary confinement, and I'm presently further isolated by being housed in a vacant section of death row. I don't know anyone on the outside with or through whom I could arrange for religious spiritual advisor visits. I would be interested in participating in a Buddhist correspondence course if one is available, but what I'm particularly searching for is an experienced Buddhist practitioner to directly correspond with, to ask questions about my studies, practice, and life. It is quite humbling for me to admit that I have much to learn, and then in parentheses before learn, he put unlearn. But it is discouraging when I have no teacher. I am also interested in obtaining any literature you are able to donate to me. And then this is the last paragraph. I want you to think of this in terms of dispassion. My sentence is 244 years without parole. I've determined that ultimately, and whether I like it or not, these confines are my monastery for the rest of my life. Everything else is only ancillary to that. This perspective has brought much peace and understanding to my life. So I'm searching for more. I thank you in advance for connecting me with someone who can provide spiritual guidance and practice support, for any literature you can send me, and for your positive thoughts. And it was signed. Is anything we're confronting any more difficult than that? So, as long as there's a way out, the mind will search for the way out, right? It's just human nature. But what about when there's no way out? 244 years, no parole, administrative segregation, and an unused portion of death row. When there's no way out, then you have to finally put down the burden. Now I tell you, because everything entering your mind has already happened, there is actually no way out. This is the beginning of dispassion and the beginning of the deep inquiry that leads to awakening. So we'll end there today.